commencing as a vast continent, considerable portions broke away and were swallowed up by the encroaching ocean at such great intervals that the story of each disaster had become a myth by the time the next one occurred. In the end, all that was left was an island, and it was this island which, according to legend, disappeared in a day and a night. As the two races merged into one during the long history of the great continent, there came many changes in the characteristics and appearance of the resulting peoples, not one homogeneous race but many tribes differing in color and habits according to the predominance of the Adamic or indigenous influences. Overall, there was a growing materialism, and most of these people were clever and cunning in battle, while they employed many strange weapons unknown to our armories. In general, they were still handsome in appearance, but already showing signs of the flat faces and high receding foreheads of later known anthropology. Even the vegetation of the land changed during this period of hardening of the Earth's crust and crystallization of its elements. The people were almost all flesh eaters by now, which added greatly to the coarsening of their bodies and their susceptibility to disease. Into their own nature they drew some of the animal nature through the flesh they consumed, together with animal fear and aggressiveness. Through heredity the resulting toxins were carried on in the bloodstream, causing a cumulative degeneration of mental outlook and receptivity to spiritual influences. In this vitiated atmosphere the celestial visitors were unable to manifest, instead the field lay open to entities whose intentions were the reverse of spiritual, for there was a residue of psychic power at the temples and monoliths where the spiritual teachers had been wont to instruct and lead the people. Excited and misled by what they took to be more powerful gods, many became maddened by lust, with a desire for conquest of any kind, including foreign wars and enslavement, for power of any kind. So it was that the influence of the cosmic Christ receded from the forefront of men's minds, though it still upheld and inspired the souls of those who would open their hearts to its benign influence. Faced with this rapid growth of degenerative influences, the priesthood, or at least that part of it which remained loyal, foresaw the need to conceal the powerful knowledge which they possessed but were unable to express. So it was enshrined in myth and symbol, over which we still puzzle to this day where it has been disclosed in ancient documents, abortively because we lack the key to understanding. Thus man was left to wear his coat of skin and labor with his hands, and to puzzle over the eternal problem of his plight, because he had shut himself off from the fountain of knowledge through his own self-will. But through it all the divine plan was at work, under the aegis of love. The flocculence of evil formed in the lower astral planes by the perverted thoughts of those who fell from high estate, had to be dissipated in the only way possible. Created and sustained by powerful but perverted mentalities, it could only be destroyed by releasing it through other mentalities, preferably in the limited circumscribed conditions of human existence. The whole history of Atlantis may be seen, not as a gigantic experiment that failed, but as a lengthy process in which the rebellious minds of men were used to release vast quantities of this evil miasma into manifestation, where it could be met and transmuted into its proper chemical constituents. We know so little about the world in which we live. Meanwhile, in this slow but steady retrogression, the lights began to go out all over Atlantis. Though many brave souls incarnated and through great labor and suffering strove to raise the flag of truth once more, their influence was ephemeral and could not have stayed the general decline. Yet never in its long history, even in its ghastly physical ending, did the everlasting arms fail to uphold the doomed continent, turning evil into good and sacrifice into spiritual power, giving and forgiving as always. The love that would not let them go. Zeros showed me how the solemn ritual of sacrifice, so wonderfully demonstrated in the Garden Beautiful, degenerated into loathsome imitation among the renegade priests. Instead of a simple offering to be immolated by atomic fire, there were offerings of value, to be taken for the benefit of the priests or the temples, having the effect of bribes. Then came animal sacrifices, where the letting of blood was found to release accretions of psychic power, up to the triumph of perversion wherein it became possible to create astral replicas of human or animal forms, possessing little short of concrete existence. These could be materialized and sent upon nefarious errands by their evil creators. I was not allowed to see any of these grisly creatures, nor did I wish to do so. Many will find it difficult to accept the veracity of this statement, for we admit of no such magic in our day, though rumors and tales abound. But these are not proof. We have to remember the considerable difference in the vibration of atomic matter between those days and our own times, when the crystallization of matter is complete. Added to which, the men of those days possessed a control over atomic forces which is lost to us. Only now are we coming to realize that it is not so much the crystallization of the actual atoms of matter as the coarsening of our senses and their relation to their environment. It was after one of the tremendous seismic disturbances that characterized life in those days, that a black emperor from one of the outer regions of what remained of Atlantis, no doubt deprived of his kingdom by subsidence, led his fear-maddened people on an invasion of the last stronghold of enlightenment, the city of the Golden Gates. Though the inhabitants of this city had become materialists to a degree, there was not the extent of degradation evident in the provinces. Vast hordes of black warriors, aided by fearful and uncanny weapons, with all the forces of illicit power behind them, overcame and enslaved the inhabitants of the city. But not even the arrogant power of the Black Emperor enabled him to establish his seat of government in the Golden Temple upon the hill. Some power beyond his ken held him back. So he built himself a palace within the city, and from the set up a regime of sadistic horror that could not bear the light of print. It was about this time that the priests were inspired to increase the streams of emigrants which for some centuries past had been establishing trade routes across the known world. Not merely one symbolic Noah set forth in an Arkansas, now were sent forth the last remaining loyal priests that the teachings of this once marvelous civilization might not be lost to the world forever. Enshrined in the mysteries, known only to the initiates, was the knowledge of creative power over the elements and the subtle forces of the earth, to be preserved for future generations when man should once more be able to stand erect and pure in heart. There were four of these streams of refugees, moving along the prepared routes leading north, south, east and west from Atlantis, thus mystically symbolizing the sacred emblem, the cross within the circle of the earth, and giving rise to the legend that there were four rivers leading but of Eden. So was saved from the doomed continent all that was worth saving, dispersing and preserving a sure message of hope and faith that was to bear fruit upon another historic occasion. For it was this esoteric Christianity, with which the earth was impregnated at its birth, which enabled its more temporal manifestation in Palestine, when the cosmic Christ projected his universal being into a personality and made his immortal sacrifice. It was this esoteric Christianity which later spread like a hidden peat fire below the material minds of the people of that period, stirring the souls of men to a new understanding and setting on fire the hearts of people so ignorant that they could not possibly have comprehended abstractions which have caused controversy among theologians to this day. It was a soul fire rather than a mental one, owing some of its combustibility to those emigrating priests from Atlantis who set up spiritual centers in isolated parts of the world, lighting flame after flame from that which had burned so steadily in ancient Atlantis. No matter what folly man commits, the cosmic Christ intervenes to smother the spreading fires of corruption, fighting them with the divine radiance in which all fires must fade. With God all things work together for good. Such was the lesson of Lemuria, of Atlantis, and repeated again and again through the checkered history of mankind. Meanwhile, the madness which had seized upon the Atlantean mind grew apace until the very atmosphere became redolent with evil emanation. Outwardly, the people remained a fine-looking, if cruel and rapacious race, making frequent aggressive expeditions to widen their territories to accommodate their growing population and serve their material needs. Great plunder and riches of slaves and merchandise came to the Golden City. And if the terrestrial upheavals, as prophesied by the astrologers, came with ever-increasing frequency and severity, what mattered it so long as the city survived and there was wine to drink and women to please the returning warriors? Were they not the greatest people in the world, with nothing to fear? Who could prevail against them? But as they turned further and further from the light, the fruits of knowledge became unripe to their lowered standard of morality. And so was established a vicious circle of poisoned minds begetting poisoned bodies, which in turn postulated poisoned minds again, and so the dark influence spread beyond control. A Frankenstein monster was created which devoured its creators. There is no need to dwell upon the frightful orgies and obscene festivals that marked the last days of Atlantis. We know from modern experience how whole nations can become enslaved by sadism and cruelty, though where modern tyrants torture the victims' bodies they can rarely reach their souls. But the Atlantean leaders besmirched the very souls of their fellows, so much more open to infection because the human frame had not crystallized to the extent that contemporary human flesh has done. Thus it was that the whole civilization had to be removed from the earth in the greatest holocaust the world has known. In the island empire, the Golden Temple alone remained inviolate, though divine wisdom was no longer able to manifest there. The last of the initiate priests, their duty accomplished, awaited with calm the storm they knew must soon break. The final disappearance of this once lovely land was a terrible event. Zeros showed me glimpses of the seismic upheavals that preceded the final submergence. I witnessed the horror of the inhabitants as the evil flocculence which saturated the very soil was disinterred during those last ghastly moments, when inhuman phantoms fled in panic from jungle fastnesses. In that terrible breakup of dark astral forces, the physical and the lower astral planes of being met and clashed in one hideous moment of time. As volcano after volcano burst into violent eruption and belched forth suffocating flames and fumes, it seemed that the fetid breath of the lowest hells was sweeping forth to smother all in its path. Not all the inhabitants were evil. We read in myth and epic poem, some of which survived as our fairy tales and folklore, how valiant heroes, spiritually strong men, rescued fair maidens, pure hearts, from the clutches of noisome monsters, slaying giants of terrible habits. For the sake of the children, these terrible stories of very real, and to us, almost unbelievable tragedies of ancient Atlantis, have been emasculated. But no tale, however horrific, could compete with the reality of that awful ending. Climb with me to the temporary safety of the Golden Temple, still serene in the sunshine. It is a still, peaceful day after the drenching rain of the past few months, which has left great lakes of flood water over the landscape. The citizens of the capital have emerged from their dwellings thankful for a dry day to get some of their clothing aired. There had been a series of earthquakes, more violent than usual, but people were accustomed to these and already gangs of slaves were at work repairing the damage. No one thought of further subsidence, for the last occasion was already but a dim memory. And such was their faith in the eternal quality of their city that they felt that nothing untoward could happen to it. So the warriors and merchants consoled themselves with banquets and the many sensual pleasures in which they delighted. It is sadly evident how this lovely city has altered since we first met it. Bristling battlements now enclose it and armed soldiers pace the streets, while the famous Golden Gates are closed at night. In dark pockets in the residential area, a vastly increased population overflows in regular rabbit warrens. Drunk with power and lust of conquest, these city dwellers wait for news of the great onslaught on the Mediterranean borderlands, which is to provide a jumping-off place for the final subjugation of the whole known world. They tarried over their feastings while the trash that were their slaves groaned under the lash. In the bazaars they chaffered and cheated. In their homes they dined and wined, in temples they sacrificed to the gods of wealth and power according to the fashion of the moment. And at times some slipped away into some ruined temple for heaven knows what bestial and sadistic rites. Night comes, and with it a sudden rise in temperature. Then a hot breathless morning greets the sun, while a deepening haze obscures the distant hills. The day grows more and more sultry and there are ominous rumblings and earth tremors. As dusk gathers and people emerge from their houses in search of cool air, there is a sudden crash and the storm bursts upon the doomed city. Great tongues of flame streak the darkening sky, and then with a roar and a thunderous crash the volcanoes add their hungry voices to the din. Even through the darkening haze of dust and rain and smoke, the lurid streams of lava can be seen as the craters vomit their contents. The first reaction among the public is a sudden panic, to be followed, as they become accustomed to even these fierce manifestations, by a fatalistic resignation. With fearful glances over their shoulders, they go about their normal tasks, with only a sense of irritability to show their inward fears. But the omens of disaster drew the people together as they realized that this was no ordinary occurrence. Master and slave, warrior and clerk, foregathered in a common sentiment and unity. As minor quakes shook down buildings here and there, one could see how the soul of man shone forth. Amid scenes of growing horror, there were examples of heroism, even to the extent of some proud warrior risking his life to save that of a miserable slave. Such is the leveling effect of imminent danger. With nightfall, an added horror was felt as huge boulders and other volcanic debris fell upon the stricken city, maiming and killing and setting buildings on fire. Aid was organized, but even this faded as the situation got completely out of hand. Maddened with a fear that spread as quickly as the flames, people grew hysterical and rushed down to the quays and boarded the vessels there, regardless of the fact that the waterways were already choked with debris. The fury of the elements abated somewhat as dawn rose on the dreadful scene, with its pitiful evidence of carnage and destruction. Great areas of the city were already laid waste and a foul-smelling haze hung over it. The news from the city outposts, where there was any, was not encouraging. The calamity seemed to be nationwide, and some coast towns were reported to be entirely submerged, with wholesale loss of life. As the sun climbed high into the heavens, the diabolical manifestations began again and slowly mounted to a new crescendo of fury. Great balls of phosphorescent fire fell from the skies, forcing the people to seek shelter, only to be driven forth again by fresh earth tremors. Out in the open they screamed as they beheld what the terrible skies disclosed. Men hurled themselves from roofs rather than face what was to come. And now, above the roar of the volcanoes and the eldritch screeching of the wind, could be heard a dull booming as mountainous tidal waves rose into the air and crashed down upon the distant beaches. Thousands of bodies of men and women and children were washed inland or sucked out to sea, as the waters piled themselves ashore in utter defiance of the forces of gravity. Soon they rushed inland and failed to retreat. Enormous areas of land were submerged and the very hills trembled as the weight of waters shook their foundations. Only the tremendous generators of volcanic eruption continued their fearful cacophony of sound, belching forth their boulders and balls of flaming lava which burst into livid streaks of fire. Most of the city was underwater when the end came. The lowest crater shuddered and sank into the greedy ocean which swept into the fiery cavern. There was a mighty roar as the two elements fought for mastery. But the end was certain, for though wave after wave was turned into terrific explosions, the weight of water gradually overcame the mighty fires with a smother of steam. One after another the mighty ones were subdued, each adding fresh convulsion to the shuddering earth. Scarcely a human being was left in sight. Finally the merciful elements drew a curtain over the last scenes of the slaying of a continent. As the last peaks sank into the boiling seas, only an impenetrable mass of oceanic mud was left where this once glorious land had been. This viscous waste withstood all trireme bellying sails so that those who would have searched the site were unable to approach. Nothing was to be snatched from this land which had fallen under the mandate of the great law of love, manifesting through cause and effect. Thus nature performed her obsequies in decency and isolation, and a sentinel was placed at the gates of this one-time Eden also, so that the cleansing waters might wipe the stains of evil from the very atmosphere. Thus passed a great race, perhaps the greatest the world has ever known, in the greatest cataclysm in the world's sad record of wreck and ruin. Through struggle and seeming failure it blossomed, and then died, receiving its redemption in the healing bosom of the earth. Who can calculate the plethora of evil influence that went down into those steaming waters to be transmuted into divine energy once more? For evil is but the love power of God perverted by incarnate minds, twisted into the opposite of goodness. Chapter 11, Atlantean Colonization. It was a few days after our last visit to the ill-fated Atlantis that Zeros sat in my study once more. Now he summed up the real lessons of the Atlantean episode, for it was no more than that in the eternal progress of humanity. Ayo, the loss was only on the physical plane, Ayo, he said, his keen eyes searching mine as if to note whether I had absorbed the real meaning of what he had shown me. Ayo, the real gain was on the spiritual level. Fallen man was able to take a great step forward, relieved of the incubus of a great amount of evil which had hitherto dragged at his heels. Ayo, in the lesson of Atlantis you can see how the testing of the soul was not only necessary but filled with possibility. We may all thank those who suffered in Atlantis, as in other later civilizations, for the light which, through their sacrifice and endurance, streamed into a darkened world. In the measure of what they suffered is seen your salvation, as in the measure of your overcoming can be seen the liberation of future generations. In the worldwide chaos and suffering of your own times can be discerned a quickening of the redemptive issue that should raise your hopes to their zenith. Presently he went on. Ayo, the four streams of emigrants which went forth to the four comers of the earth from decaying Atlantis carried with them a power of which your scientists are yet ignorant. It was a form of magnetism that was expressed through the teachings they brought to the indigenous inhabitants of the world, still held in the thrall of superstition and fear. This meant that the powers which had been channeled through the spiritual centers in Atlantis were now spread abroad so that their influence could be felt in wider fields. It was all part of a preconceived plan. You could call this power the power of love if you like, but remember it is a dynamic force, far removed from the emotion which so often man misuses. It is creative, burgeoning with impulses that will not be denied. Ayo, it was this same power which, in olden days, was used for instantaneous healing of the sick, for blessing the crops with wonderful results, for controlling the weather and for producing the magical results which have puzzled your research workers. It is all gone now, since the very soil of the earth has settled into more crystalline form and your intellects have submerged the deep understanding of natural forces which made these demonstrations possible. Have you not wondered why your Christians accept, without question, the strange events chronicled in your Bible, yet which your professors of physics would say were quite impossible? So they are, today, but in olden times conditions were such that they would have altered all your scientific concepts. All that knowledge had to be concealed in what are known as the ancient mysteries. Only today are the keys to these mysteries being given back to man, one by one. Ayo, what would you say those keys are? Ayo inquired. Ayo, to begin with, most world religions are only now beginning to emerge from medieval inhibitions. Christian thought no longer pins its faith to a first man and his dependent female, and it is seeking escape from the clinging notion of a vindictive God. Ayo, it is well to exercise your imagination as to what God must be. If he is an omniscient, omnipotent creator, working through love, then you can enrich your thinking with the idea that he is the generator of a love that is all-powerful, dynamic, creative. You have no idea of what this love power can do. It is all sufficient to regenerate the whole of humanity, and much, much more. It is so potent that when opposed by its opposites it becomes a raging fire that burns all dross. Were it to be released in all its splendor, the whole of your earth would be incinerated on the instant. That is why you have to be veiled from it, in mercy. You have a glorious destiny, your original destiny, to become part of the fire of love, creative, burgeoning forth in eternal wonder. But few could hold the reality of that thought. Ayo, in the meantime the soul of man is like a bird on the wing which stoops to drink of the water of experience. Some souls stoop too low and become temporarily immersed in the waters of Lethe. But none may drown. God is not mocked, he cannot fail in his ultimate purpose. Ayo, the keys to knowledge are not material ones, and only when you have freed yourself from the clinging strands of materialism can you find them. Those ancient colonists had them. They possessed the inner understanding of the realities behind the life they lived, and were able to use those forces for the betterment of mankind. They were great souls, freedmen of time. They were born of the volatile currents of Mercury, they had basked in the warmth of Venus, They had meditated in the cold, impersonality of Saturn. They understood the electrical and chemical nature of matter, and the laws governing it. They came to awaken, to teach, to lead, to prophesy. Your life, which is love in expression, is so much more than the material mind can ever know. Its loveliness, its warm comfort, its joys, are unintelligible to the cold contemplation of intellect. Yet the simple soul can appreciate them. You cannot argue about them. Only by opening your heart to them, to the revealing light of spirit, can you make them your own. The mysteries of God are part of creation, impossible of acceptance by the materialist, yet babes can understand them, for God is simple. It is the human mind which is complex. A. There was a silence before Zeros went on. A. Oh, so the Adamic race really did fulfill their mission, they did not fail. The broad streams of enlightenment which flowed out of Atlantis owed their inception to this sacrificial descent into a distorted world, and they fertilized and irrigated human thought as no other method could have done. And in no other way could men's minds and souls be prepared for that final flashing descent of the Christ of love into incarnation, which set a seal upon the destined redemption of a fallen humanity. But there were many failures before that, A.I. put in. Oh yes indeed, civilization after civilization rose and fell, and many accounted them failures from the aesthetic point of view. But from the spiritual point of view they were not failures. Like the Atlantean epoch, all that was best in them was saved and passed on, only the dross was destroyed. All that is best in your own civilization can be traced to its elements expressed in olden times. Your dreams of the future rest on foundations built by civilizations of whose very existence you are ignorant. They made you what you are, just as you are making the men and women of the future. But as far as we know, no other civilization has had such a terrible ending as the Atlantean. That is true. But you must remember that the very nature of those people was different to your own or those of later days. By the time the two races were intermingled, they were hopelessly perverted in their soul life, their bodies were much more tenuous than your own, and they had to deal with an accumulation of powerful perverted impulses that had to be released from the lower astral realms, impulses born of perverted spiritual knowledge quite beyond your understanding. What went down with Atlantis was something which the world has never known since. Neither the ethereal beauty of the Adamic race nor the horror of the later perversion. At that moment of submergence a fresh veil was drawn over the minds of men the world over. Thus modern men can sin more deeply without such enduring hurt to their souls, because of this veil, a veil that must soon be drawn again to disclose the naked soul of man to the light of truth. For some that must be an agonizing experience. What a terrible thought, I mused aloud. Zeros smiled understandingly. Ao, your orthodox ideas of a judgment day are an insult to the creative love of God. How could love judge and condemn and punish? I tell you that the greatest punishment you can ever experience will be the exposure of your soul to the judgment of your own spirit, the dark stain of human frailty held up to the searching light of perfection. None will ever judge you but your own implacable spirit, than which there can be no more terrible trial. But that is where the warm love of the cosmic Christ finds its opportunity. At the moment of man's deepest realization of his own inadequacy, it can step in to redeem, to uplift, to set him on his feet once more, supporting him with a new courage and determination born of his bitter experience. Ao, medieval misunderstanding mangled all the lovely promises and explanations into the terrible exposition which lives to this day in many desperate hearts. And modern thought seeks to dislocate them still further by rationalizing them. It was this glory of love which held the balance between the two races in Atlantis. It illumined the four streams of emigrants going forth from the doomed continent, and it shone radiantly through the lovely Easter story, when the cosmic Christ descended into incarnation that he might seal himself into the very fabric of material life, so that the everlasting arms might uphold man from falling out of reach. From the beginning of earthly time the life of man has been planned by omniscient power, there has never been any doubt as to the outcome. His redemption has only been delayed in time, never in eternity. Always his life has been epitomized by the ancient symbol, the cross within the circle of completion, demonstrating the immortal nature of man and the glory of God. Ao in ancient Egypt, in olden India, in prehistoric China and ancient South America, in England itself, may be found this primal symbol of the cross within the circle. Does not your Britannia seat herself upon the symbol in your coinage?